This sermon is called Growing Trees, and it's based on Matthew 20, verses 20 through 28.
As we prepared for our wedding day, Stacy had three top priorities. Number one priority, a beautiful big mountain church so that our family and friends could all celebrate together. Number two priority, a beautiful dress. And her third priority, beautiful photos, so we could talk and remember this day with one another forever. And then, as our moms lit the candles on the altar at the beginning of the ceremony, we dimmed the lights and we began our wedding service like this. And that was everybody else's reaction as well. Laughter erupted. And of course, afterwards, people were like, that's just so Dale and Stacy to do. And so then we were amazed. We were amazed because our friends and our family filled the seats. And then the procession began, and oh, just no words can describe the processions at a wedding. And then, of course, these are Stacy's bridesmaids, including her little cousin, Mia Helena Schofield, who's 16 years old now. We can't believe it. But I'm getting old. And then there were my guys, my groomsmen who were there, my friends, my brothers, people who are in your corner to support and encourage you. And then the ceremony began. And my friend, Tom Airy, said, now, Dale, we know who the wedding is for and what this is all about. That there's got to be one thing that you want in this wedding. So I decided every one of us would have Jordans. So in honor of that, I wore these Jordans today. And Stacy's one request, they have to be black Jordans. So they didn't clash with everything. So we found every groomsman black Jordans. It was a lot of fun. Then we had our friends, Pam and my roommate, Josh, sing and lead us in singing. And then we had our friends read scripture to us, scripture that was meaningful to us, 1 Corinthians 13. My friend and longtime roommate, Andrew Wyanette, and a lady who invested a lot into our lives, Fran Eckhart. And then, of course, we got to the part, and I was unprepared for the moment that would be there when we said our vows to one another. We had decided that we would write some of our own and combine it with some traditional vows as well. And when we got to that moment, it was like thick in the air. It was like this incredible moment of commitment that you can't put those words to. And when we say vows at our wedding to our spouses and to our partners, we seem to say three things. No matter if we do it differently, no matter if we go traditional, if we say our own thing, we say these three things. One thing we commit to is we commit to love them greater than we love ourselves. Mike Mason in The Mystery of Marriage, he said it this way. He said, when we commit to love someone, we don't just commit a little bit or a whole lot, but everything, all that we are to love someone else. And then the second thing we do is we commit to see the world through their eyes. Because marriage is nothing if we can't learn to see what makes our partner tick, how they understand and react to the things of the world. And the third thing that we commit to is we commit to grow. We commit to be our best selves, no matter what. No matter if bankruptcy and heartache come our way, we commit to be our best for them and for us. So the vows are what undid me on my wedding day. But Stacy and I said, we do, I do, we do. Then we kissed. Then we processed down the aisle. Then we danced. Then we celebrated. And then we made two kids together. And she's keeping me around. But when I think about those vows, and in that church they had this beautiful wooden cross. And when I think about that wooden cross, that we also have vows to something higher. Our lives are about something greater, too, than our spouse. There is a God reality to all of our life. And we see it in the beauty outside, and we hear it in our quiet moments, and we experience it with one another, those holy moments we hold on to. We have a greater commitment to make. And if we don't make that commitment, we can't be all that we're supposed to be to our partners, our spouses, to our friends, and to our family. And so I suggest to you that when we follow the Rabbi Jesus, that Palestinian Jew who 2,000 years ago taught us the way of love, we've made some vows within our heart. We've made a commitment to love God with all of our heart. We've made a commitment to learn, even though the road gets rocky, to learn the way of life. We've made a commitment to grow, to do what it takes to become all that God has created us to be. So Rabbi Jesus invites us to the adventure of a lifetime. Rabbi Jesus offers us freedom and abundant life. And this abundant life gives us that ability to be alive, present to others, open to all the possibilities of life, forgiven, forgiving, peaceful, compassionate, and generous with our time, our talent, and our treasures. The Rabbi Jesus goes before us, opening us to all that life can possibly be. And we learn from the Rabbi Jesus what it means to sow wildflowers or to forgive. We've been bruised, we've been broken, and we've been cut. But the Rabbi Jesus asks us to forgive, to take off those boxing gloves and to let the past be the past, no matter how hard and how painful it is. The Rabbi Jesus has asked us to burn sage, to love our enemies. There are these people in our world who get underneath our skin, but Rabbi Jesus invites us to love them, to not let hate ever have the last word, but love to be the anthem that reigns from our heart to the world. And then the Rabbi Jesus invites us today, in today's passage, to serve one another, to grow trees in our midst. And what's fantastic about the passage today, that in Matthew 20 is nearing the end of the gospel. There's only 8 more chapters left, and Jesus is in his last week on earth. And so, in the Dale paraphrase version, Matthew says this to his disciples. Jesus says this to his disciples. He says, it's going to get tough. It's going to get real tough from here on out. The Jewish leadership is going to hand me over to the Roman leadership. The Roman leadership is going to beat me and crucify me, and I'm going to die a criminal's death. But don't worry. When all seems hopeless, when all seems lost, it's going to be okay. Hope and light and love are on the way. Resurrection is coming, not only to my life, but to all of our life. And then just after that incredible moment where he shares that with his disciples, the mother of Zebedee comes in, and it's like her and these two sons, James and John, kind of didn't hear that whole little message. And the mother of Zebedee comes in before Jesus, and I like to imagine that these sons, they're just kind of timid and shaky. I mean, they're letting mama kind of do her thing. So mama comes, and she bows down before Jesus, and Jesus is like, what do you want? What do you need? And she says, say the word so that my sons, when they enter your kingdom, can sit at your right hand and your left hand. And Jesus says, you don't know what you are asking. And then Jesus says this question, can they drink the cup that I have to drink? He's reminding them again. Remember I said that part about it getting hard in the crucifixion? Can they do that? Can they go through that? And the sons in unison reply, yes, we can. We are able. And so then Jesus says to them, yeah, you are able. But to sit at my right hand and my left hand side, that's not mine to grant. That's my Father's business. Now, mind you that at this point in time, this is 2 of the disciples. Remember, there's 10 others. They're at this campsite, and the 10 others are sitting over there, and they are angry. I mean, who do these two guys think they are, right? All of us have been hanging out with Jesus for the last 3 years, and these two think they are better than the rest. And they got their mama to do their dirty work, you know? So all of these guys, they've been together, and these two, they want to be great. They want to be above all the rest. And so the other 10 are starting to bicker, and they're getting angrier and saying, what is going on here? So Jesus says, come here, let me tell you something. rallies everyone together. It's time for one of those teaching moments in life. And Jesus says, you know that the rulers of the Gentile, they lord it over. The Greek word is katekurio. Katekurio, to conquer, to make someone their master. And then he says, and you know that their mighty ones, their governors, their generals, they katezuthiazo, they oppress with power. Katekurio, katezuthiazo. These are words with teeth, words that are biting. Jesus says, you know those leaders that we all see in the streets, those Roman governors? They're oppressive. They are beating us down. And so these words are alarming. These words jar us to wake up. And then Jesus pauses, and we're ready for the heart of what he has to say. And it says, it will not be so among you. Oh, and so our hearts are filled with this sense of, what does it mean, it will not be so among you? And what does it mean that he used these katekurio and katezusio, these words with teeth? Well, Jesus grew up in Nazareth of Galilee, in this region you see at the top of the screen. And in Galilee at the time, Herod's son Antipas was the governor. And during this time period, the highest amount of taxation, the highest amount of oppression for normal local farmers than has ever been in the history of that place. Antipas erected Roman villas. Antipas also burned down a whole village for not paying enough taxes. So Jesus grew up with the memory of all those, the people from Sepphoris had come to live with the people in Nazareth. The whole village ran from this fire. So Jesus was well aware of what the Roman power had to do, what Roman power was doing, what this type of leadership does to local communities. So at that point, we're like, okay, we get that. Jesus does not like that type of leadership. But how does this relate to the two guys that just want to sit at his right hand and left hand side, right? I mean, you know, sure, it's arrogant, but it's not burning down villages, right? But there's something strange about human life, about our hearts and where our hearts can go. And I think Jesus is calling out what happens when we think we are better than someone else. Now, there's no doubt that all of us have different talents, different callings, different things that we're passionate about. And that's okay. Some people are better at doing other things. But in our heart, at our core, there is no one better than anyone else. We're all children of God. We're all made in God's image. We're all dearly and deeply loved. So when we have that attitude, it becomes easy for us to cast judgments, to take more than we should, to not be fair and equitable. So Jesus is saying, it will not be so among you. The people who follow the rabbi are people who don't lead power-mongering, authoritative. They're people who lead in a different way. But we're wondering what way that is. And Jesus says to us, do you want to be great? Be the servant of all. Do you want to be the first of all? Be the slave of all. Jesus, in this amazing little passage, has redefined for us greatness. Greatness is not about being high and mighty and exercising our power. Greatness is about serving our brothers and sisters. Greatness is about giving ourselves and investing into our friends, our family, our community. I love the way this businessman, business guru, Tim Sanders puts it. The most important new trend in business is the downfall of the barracudas, the sharks, and the piranhas, and the ascendancy of nice, smart people, because they are what I call love cats. Jesus invites us to be love cats. Jesus invites us to help one another grow, to be servants hand in hand and heart to heart to one another, not on top of one another. We're called to be servant leaders to all. It's an incredibly different vision than the one we get. So it makes me think about, well, how does this work? And it seems to me that Jesus suggests to us that we grow trees. When you grow a tree, you have to plant, you have to water, you have to mulch, and you have to trim. And there's a purpose to each one of these exercises. So when we plant, we prepare the soil to plant and thrive. And then when we water, we allow those roots to grow deep into that soil so that one day it can bloom for the world. Then when we mulch, we insulate that soil from the hot and cold weather. And pruning removes that undesirable growth, the pest, and the diseases. Jesus, the rabbi, invites us to grow trees. We grow trees when we invest in the relationships in front of us. Our friends, our family, our sons, our daughters. Every person you meet is a chance to grow a tree. It's a chance to invest into someone else and help them to bloom for this world. And as we invest into one another, we make our community a stronger, better place. We make trees that blossom for generations and generations to come. The rabbi invites you to the world-transforming idea that all of us are called to build one another up in a great harmony of humankind and human love for each other. So we plant. And this is an ongoing practice that we think about. We're all in a season of planting. No matter if we're newly born and our parents are thinking about where to best live, where should we plant this new daughter, this new son, or whether we're retired and we're wondering about where do we plant ourselves in this season? What soil do we put ourselves down so that who we are can thrive? And when we seek to love someone else, we listen to where they're at. We help point them in the right direction, help lead them to the right types of soil. We are attentive to them. And then there's watering. Watering is the love that we pour into people's life. Watering is what we do day in and day out. No matter how old we are, no matter how young we are, we need the love that comes from the encouragement, the friendships, and the family that we have. And then there's the mulching. There's these serious times in our life where pain or bankruptcy or unseen circumstances just absolutely jar us to what life is about. And this is when we need our friends to be really attentive to us, to provide that mulch that insulates us from all of that hard stuff. This is where we go the extra mile in our love, when we write letters and maybe we give a meal and maybe we just sit with that person in silence and say, "Oh, I hate that this has happened to you right now." And then there's the pruning. Now, pruning has this kind of negative connotation when you talk about humans, but pruning is just the step of growth that we all need to take. Maybe your job has ended and you need to learn a new set of skills in order to be more competitive to the job market. That is a type of pruning, reaching out. And our friends, when they invest into us, can do that so lovingly. They can say, "Well, you can gain this skill," or "I see this in you that could help you become this, to help you lead you down this career route." When we see the relationships around us as opportunities to grow trees, we think about how we can plant, how we can water, how we can mulch, and how we can prune. And even though some relationships will be deeper than others, we can always, always find something to serve and love our brothers and sisters with. When I think about this little process, I think about the Slappy family. And Tom has already warned that I was going to embarrass him at this point in the sermon. You can talk to him. He's got some goods on me as well. But Tom and Carrie Slappy and their son Michael, they've been coming to our church for over 8 months. Now, Tom and Carrie, they really reflected on, where do we want to raise our son? And they moved from Jacksonville, Florida, to come to the Western Slopes so that Michael could have an opportunity here to grow as a tree, to thrive. It was an intentional decision that cost Tom a lucrative job position with the steel company, that cost Carrie more other opportunities she might have had in a bigger city. But Michael has the biggest backyard of any kid on the Western Slopes, I assure you. And not only did they think about where they wanted to plant him, they thought about watering him. If you watch Tom and Carrie, they love Michael over and over again. They're investing into that boy, whether it's T-ball or whether it's the Lutheran preschool they go to. They love their son. And then there's the mulching. Now, whenever Michael scrapes himself or falls out of a tree, I've hung out with the Slappies. They'll hold that boy and they'll tell him he's loved and they comfort him from anything that's coming his way. And then there's the pruning. I've also been in a cabin where Michael is a tough 5-year-old and seen Mr. Tom Slappy also lovingly guide his son into the corrections that he should have. Tom and Carrie have invested into their son. They've sought to be great by serving their son. And right now, in Michael's life, there's this special moment that's blossoming forth. Just last week, Stacy told me that in Mosaic, our children's program, that Michael, he is the number one kid in class. He is dancing. He is singing the songs. It doesn't matter that the cool boys are in the corner. He is alive with what God is doing in his life. And then last week, Michael, he cuts through the beeline of the little line right here, and he hands me this. And I say, I'm kind of like, oh, shoot. I don't even know how to read my son's handwriting, and now I got to read some other five-year-old's. And then he looks at me, and he totally got my puzzled look, and he goes, Dale. He said, Pastor Dale, it means I love God. Look at that. And it's amazing. And then there's this other story of Michael that I love to tell. That one time I came out to greet the Slappies, and Tom had been on a business vacation. During this vacation, he, not a business vacation, but Tom combines business with his vacations. He'd been on a business trip, and he got to actually come here and meet his son. He came back earlier than he thought, and I happened to be right here at the time where Michael locked eyes with his dad that he hadn't seen in a week. And Michael, the little five-year-old, grabs his dad's arm and says, I missed you, Dad. I love you, Dad. I can't wait to spend time with you, Dad. Oh. At what point, I ran into my little room, and I stayed there for 5 minutes to control my crying before I had to come out and lead the worship service. It was an awesome moment because the Slappies have decided that being great means investing into their kids. And of course, Michael's not done. It's going to be a heck a lot of a heck a lot. How's that for a good grammar? Did I tell you I have a PhD? The point is that we have the opportunity with our sons and our daughters, with our friendships, to grow trees. The Rabbi Jesus asks us to do three things as we follow him: to sow wildflowers, to forgive, to let go of those pains, to love our enemies or to burn sage, and to grow the trees that are around us, to see every human being as a relationship that we can invest in, that we can help move forward. But the Rabbi Jesus gives us this promise at the very end of the Gospel of Matthew: I will be with you always, day after day, night after night, until the end of the age. The rabbi believes in you. The rabbi loves you. The rabbi encourages you. The rabbi himself dares you to grow trees in our community. Amen.